It was a bit early for someone to be banging on the front door. I hurried down the stairs, hair still dripping from the shower, and turned the latch.
"Sorry, son, locked myself out,"
said Dad, shivering as he stepped in. He'd been out in his slippers, I noticed. I wondered why, until I saw the TV trade mag folded in his hand, and my heart sank. Dad looked pretty rough. His pale blue eyes were red-rimmed, and his fair hair was standing up in spikes that weren't dishevelled or trendy, but made him look like he'd slept in a doorway. I'd heard him come home late last night and stumble around, trying not to make a noise, crashing into the furniture and cursing under his breath. But he'd got up the same time he always did, while I was out running, and the breakfast he'd made was still warm on the table. Old eggs, thin salty bacon and instant coffee, white. I'd nab a glass of orange juice when I got to work, though the most orange thing about the stuff we sold was its colour.
"Bollocks,"
said my dad, squinting through his crooked glasses at the magazine's first inside page. That hadn't taken long.
"What's up?" "Bill Winchester's got a second series of that time-travelling cop show. Jammy sod."
"Future Perfect?" My dad gave a look as if I was being disloyal. "Never seen it," I shrugged. "I've heard of it, that's all."
"Me and Bill worked together years ago on Henby General."
"Yeah, you said."
But he didn't say it very often.
Dad had been big in the early 90s. For a while, he was everyone's favourite twinkly-eyed Irish actor. He'd even won an award for Best Newcomer. The bronze statuette still stood on the mantelpiece, gathering ironic dust. From then on, it had all been downhill. He didn't keep the statuette on display out of nostalgia or vanity. It was there to fuel his envy. "Envy keeps you hungry," Dad would say, which I'd never understood, because I was hungry all the time and I'd never got to like it. But all Dad's old acting mates were doing better than him. If it had been true that every time a friend succeeds, a little part of you dies, by now my dad would have been a really ripe zombie. He saw himself as a passionate, committed and challenging performer. Directors soon got to see him as temperamental, pig-headed and impossible to work with. The jobs had already started to dry up when he met my mother, and his last role had been years ago, eating imaginary pizza on a desert island in a commercial. For insurance, I think. It might have been for pizzas. Or desert islands. He never officially retired, but he grew a beard and stopped going to auditions and quit pestering his agent for work. He wasn't going to wait for the phone to ring, he said. He was going to make his own luck. He was going to write a TV epic so gripping and authentic that producers would be ripping each other's throats out to make it. And he'd write a really good part for himself, so they'd have to cast him. Not the lead, of course. He had to be realistic, he said. The lead could go to one of his more famous old mates to help get the show commissioned. He had it all worked out. He'd had it all worked out for years now, and it never seemed to happen. "Don't sweat it, Dad. You always say success is the best revenge."
"Yeah, but I might be wrong," said Dad. "Maybe the best revenge is cutting someone's head off with a rusty saw. Maybe I should try that instead."
I carried our empty plates out to the kitchen to wash up. "So, what are you doing today?" I said, more out of politeness than interest.
"Working," he said.
Dad used the term loosely. A lot of his work seemed to consist of staring out the window. He had read every book on writing screenplays the local library could scrape together, and he was always quoting aphorisms and mottos about inspiration and perspiration, and pants being applied to the seat of a chair, and he always wrote 10 pages a day. The only problem was, next day, he'd tear up 9 of them.